Okay, so this is based on joint work with Silvia Micali. And yeah, so today we heard a lot of about a lot of complicated things: angels, universal composability, compression, and so on. So today we're gonna do, or now we're gonna do something much simpler. The following very simple question: what is knowledge? And it's not only a simple question; it's also been around for a long time. And some people might even say that this question is as old as humanity itself. And even you could define humanity by this very question. Oh, and a clicker.
So I'll hold on to this, don't worry.
So where are we?
Oh, do you know where to put
it? It doesn't click.
Okay, it's green, it's green. You can click.
Okay, okay. So this question has mostly been studied in philosophy. There's even a whole subfield in philosophy called epistemology devoted only to this question, but it's also very important in psychology, neuroscience, economics, and so forth. And recently, it has also become very important in computer science. So a computational approach to the notion of knowledge was introduced in the paper on probabilistic encryption by Goldbass and Micali, and this approach was later refined by Goldbass and Micali and Rakoff in the context of zero knowledge and proofs of knowledge. And in essence, their approach to defining knowledge is that I'm considered to know only what I can feasibly compute. Right? And as feasible computation usually is equated to probabilistic polynomial time, this sentence, in essence, equals saying that if something is not computable in probabilistic polynomial time, then I don't know it. Whereas if something is computable in probabilistic polynomial time, then I do actually know it. Right? And the first one of these seems rather okay. If something cannot be computed in probabilistic polynomial time, if it requires exponential time to compute, then it's fairly okay to say that I probably don't know this. Right? But if something is computable in probabilistic polynomial time, do I really know it? So let's say.
It's a little confusing here when you say I.
Do I know something if it's computable in probabilistic polynomial time? Let's say something is computable in entropy 50 time. Do I actually know that thing?
But what is I? Is I a computer or is I a person?
I is me.
That's what I'm saying.
It's humanity, right?
So I don't agree that it's okay the first one if I is you the person.
Why not? Can I compute things that are?
Of course we can. We know things that we can't compute, right?
That are not computable in polynomial time?
So it's like a baby, okay? A baby doesn't know how to speak. Does that mean that it doesn't have any thoughts? It doesn't have any words, right? So,
No. We're not in this field now. Which one? Where do you want to be? Here, or? We're here.
So I still don't agree, but I'll let you continue.
Okay, so this one is acceptable. This one is maybe a bit too much, right? And we'd potentially like to do without that. So that's what we're going to...
So of course that the second is no, because maybe I don't want to bother computing it. I can in theory, but I don't want to bother computing it.
Same answer as the previous question.
No, I think you're not right. This relates to computer science.
Someone gives you a witness and you can verify, do you know it or not?
Well, you know, it depends what this PPT is. If it's entered 100, then, you know, it's unclear if I actually know it or not, right?
No, but suppose you have...
Sorry?
Suppose someone gives you a
three color
ring, and you can verify it. Do you know how to color this
graph? If I can verify it, then I think, yeah, I agree that I know that this statement is true, right? Maybe this was too philosophical.
No, it wasn't enough, but you're not willing to take on the philosophical.
I could, but maybe not here.
Offline.
Yeah. So what I'd like to do today is to introduce a more precise computational approach to knowledge, where we don't, in fact, use the notion of probabilistic polynomial time in order to measure or quantify the knowledge of a body, but instead use the actual computation performed by a body in order to quantify its knowledge. And this will give a new, a new way of modeling knowledge that can be applicable in all different contexts where knowledge is important in cryptography, like zero knowledge proofs, proofs of knowledge, encryption, secure computation, and so on and so forth. So in all these things, we can use our new approach and we get a precise equivalent of all these different objects. So today, we're going to focus on the top one, since you already seen the name of the talk, which is that of precise zero-knowledge proofs. So what are precise zero-knowledge proofs? Well, first let me mention a few words about what zero-knowledge is, which hopefully everyone already knows. So zero-knowledge is, first of all, it's a definition of security. Zero-knowledge also comes with a set of techniques for arguing the security of protocols. And finally, zero-knowledge proofs are very important and fundamental cryptographic building blocks. Precise zero-knowledge proofs will be all of the same, but stronger. That we can argue about later, but... We'll be more precise later. But before we're more precise, let's be a bit fuzzy. So what is zero-knowledge? What are zero-knowledge proofs? In the setting of zero-knowledge proofs, we have two parties, a prover and a verifier, Alice and Bob here in this picture, and Alice wants to convince Bob that a certain statement X is true, and X can be thermostat theorem, for instance. And what we require from this protocol is that Bob should only be convinced if indeed X is true, and secondly, Bob should not know why this is the case. And it's the second property, that Bob should not know why this is the case, that's the zero-knowledge property. So let me briefly recall the definition of zero-knowledge, even though everyone knows it, because I will require it. No. So the definition stipulates that for every probabilistic polynomial verified V star, and there should exist a simulator S, that will in essence be able to reconstruct everything the verifier sees in its interaction with the prover. So a bit more precisely, on the right side here, we consider an interaction between the prover and the verifier. And the view of this verifier in the interaction consists of the random coins that the verifier picks in the interaction and the messages he receives, which are here. And on the left side, we can instead consider a simulator that talks to no one and should be able to output some view, the blue thing there, that is indistinguishable from whatever the verifier sees here. And the rationale behind this definition is that V star here learns nothing that cannot be generated by V star itself. Right? And the reason is because V star can in fact just take the simulator, run it in his belly, and just generate everything he sees. Okay? So the question that we can ask us on self now is, so what does V star itself mean here? Since the simulator is a probabilistic polynomial time machine, and in fact arbitrary probabilistic polynomial time machine, what I mean by V star itself here is all of probabilistic polynomial time, right? So V star doesn't learn more than what can be generated in probabilistic polynomial time. And as we said, maybe this is a bit too excessive. Ideally, what we'd like to have is a scenario where V star itself means V star itself. Right? So this is even, it's a bit circular even in a colloquial way, but yeah.
This is not.
Sorry?
The worst case Galinkan V star will be only a polynomial away from the worst case Galinkan S, right? The standard definition.
Not the standard definition, standard protocols. But we'll get back to that later. But the definition is this, right?
You want even stronger than this worst case.
Yes, yes. But I'll get back to that worst case. Yeah.
No, but I still don't understand. Suppose I have V star running on Dell 300, but then I bought Dell 800 that runs, you know, twice as fast as Dell 300, presumably. So what does it mean?
What? That I haven't said V star means, because V star, this is equivalence.
No, V star is a polynomial time computation. So yeah. If you say you're going to distinguish between polynomials, I buy machines that is three times faster.
I haven't said yet what I'm going to do. Right.
No, but
then
you know more.
I haven't said, let's discuss that in a minute, okay?
But wouldn't that imply that you know more if you have a stronger machine by your
philosophy? Yeah, I agree that, you know, a stronger machine you can do more.
Yeah.
Money doesn't imply smartness, right? So I spent a little more money.
Well, that shows that you're smart. Invest more money in this appropriate
thing.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So, we'd like to have a definition where V star itself actually means V star itself. And to be a bit more precise. What is vstar itself again? Sorry.
Okay, that's what I'm going to say now. So what I mean by vstar itself is the same time that vstar actually invested in the interaction with P. So I would like to have a notion that says that vstar learns nothing that cannot be generated in the same time that he actually invested in the interaction. Okay, so let me give an example of what this means. So consider verify that with 99% probability takes n steps, and with 1% probability takes n to the 50 steps. I would like to have a notion that in essence guarantees that whenever this guy takes n steps, I can simulate whatever he sees in n steps, but whenever he takes n to the 50 steps, I can simulate it n to the 50 steps.
And these steps are in interaction, or?
Sorry?
These steps are in during interaction, right?
Yes, if in this interaction, the verifier v takes n steps, I can generate whatever he sees in n steps. When he takes n to the 50, I can generate what he sees in n to the 50 steps.
I don't understand.
On the same machine.
My bigger machine.
Suppose I have bad coins, right? And I see that I run more than n steps. I run n plus 1 steps. I say, oops, bad coins. Let me toss new coins and run again. Right, so why would I ever get to n to the 50? At most I will run at
so what
2m or 3m in expectations.
So what is your claim? That you can actually satisfy it or what?
No.
Now it's the definition.
N to the 50 steps on what? Depending on your randomness? So pick better.
If in a particular interaction I took n to the 50 steps, I would like to say that whatever the guy saw here can be generated in n to the 50.
But
right?
Let
us take this when we get to the definition, please. Right? This is...
Okay.
Right?
Okay. So, run answer my question.
We'll see it very precisely soon. Okay. Now, we can see it. So, let's first consider the interaction between the prover and the verifier. Okay? And now we're going to time the number of computation steps a verifier takes in an interaction. And we're going to consider an interaction where the verifier has a particular set of random coins here, and now the prover starts talking to the verifier, and we're going to time the number of steps. So the prover sends a message, the verifier computes, the clock starts ticking, he sends back a message, we stop the clock. Okay? Then the prover computes something, the clock doesn't move, he sends another message, the verifier computes, and so on and so forth. At the end of this conversation, we get the number t, that's the number of steps v took in a particular view. Right? Does it answer all the questions? Okay. So what we'd like to have now is the existence of a simulator, S here, that will output a view that should look the same as whatever this verifier sees here. And on top of that, we'll require that this machine S should use at most 2t steps in order to generate this view. Right?
Why 2t?
Let's say 2t. we can generalize that later.
And simulator is the same coin?
The simulator outputs this, he doesn't know whatever he wants. Okay.
That's very specific to the computational model. 2T, 3T.
Same computational model, yeah.
You could buy pointer machines where you could have a
grid. Yeah, like sure the same answer to every person, right? That is, it's a constant answer.
Yeah,
it's a constant
same machine, same. You know, we don't have to consider two. We can consider polynomial, linear, whatever you want, right? If that's a problem, think of two as a polynomial, right? If you prefer.
No, I wouldn't. I would want it to be one.
Yeah, we want it. Yeah, I agree. We can. You know, this would be a parameter. We can set it to whatever you want. This is not.
Can you set it to one?
What do you mean by view?
No.
Okay, we're not done with the definition yet. We can discuss it when we see the definition.
No, I'm serious. Can you set it to one?
I don't know how to do one, no.
But if I don't
understand... I'm not done with the definition yet.
No,
it's not it.
So, there was an old result of Gurevich that showed that linear time is not closed under composition, that you need something like n log n in order to even be closed under composition. So when you say that it's linear, right, it's... polynomial time is closed under composition, linear time is not,
yeah,
as far as I know. So how
it doesn't bother me.
It bothers me,
you know,
yeah. Because you're claiming the relation which is a linear time, and that's device dependent.
I'm saying, you know, what I'll say later on, in half an hour from now, I'll give photos and let's achieve something else. In this space, you know.
Oh, I
will be able to actually show that whatever this guy sees in a particular machine, I will be able to do in the same machine in Rafi, listen. This guy, whatever he has, if he has your pencil, whatever machine you have, I will be able to take and run a program on this thing on the same machine, and I will take roughly, you know,
most
of that.
But I understand what's troubling Rafi.
Yeah. Anything to do with me or with like the weekend or something?
Okay, what's troubling Rafi is the following, okay?
Yeah.
There is some other guy who generated the same transcript,
yeah.
Okay? But it took him on another machine. This, we know that this transcript can be generated in 10 minutes,
yeah.
Okay? But there's another guy who generated and took him 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Why? Exactly, right? Do I understand
you
or not?
Yes.
So that's what, even though you're saying,
okay,
so
you know what?
So the guy who generated in 20 and the simulator worked in 20.
Yeah.
Okay? Now there's a guy who worked in 10. Why should he get, the other way around. The 10 and the 10 are the simulator. And now there's a guy who worked in 20. So he could be getting in 20 minutes much more information that could be generated.
So from now on, we're going to talk about this computer whenever we talk a computer, and only this computer, okay?
But that's device,
but that's device specific. Right.
So your
right.
computer, so your results hold to your computer, but maybe they don't hold to mine.
No, but this is for every verifier.
This is
No. Every verifier. Yes. It's the verifier and the simulator working on the same machine.
On the
simulator
same.
Is the same consciousness in the same mind with the same machine with whatever money he has to buy whatever computer.
Yeah,
is
but there are other verifiers. Okay,
this
I'm the chair of the session. So I think, where are you going? Where are you going? What did you do?
I was trying to find the last slide.
Okay.
The question slide.
Okay. Okay. So I want to settle this so we can proceed. I think we have a problem. And I think that Rafi and I are slightly in misunderstanding or in a non-agreement, but we'll continue. Rafi, okay?
Okay.
Okay. We'll continue for one more slide and then
okay.
We'll interrupt you again.
So for now we agree that every time we say computer, we talk about that particular Turing
machine.
Don't
say that because we're not happy with that.
That's, if you're not happy with that, that same concern can be given in anything, all the results that we have in computers. All the results we have in cryptography relate to a particular Turing machine model, right?
Just to reconfirm.
No, the number of
let's
continue. This is not the definition yet. We haven't got the definition.
A real question.
No, so actually speed up theorems are not that easy with provisible over time, right? So, but yeah, I would love to do that actually. I think that's a very interesting problem. Okay, so let me restart again. So we have here on the right side an interaction to a proof verifier, and here this interaction took a number of steps. We require the existence of a simulator that outputs a view that looks the same, and it should do so in at most 2T steps. Then we'll be very happy. Unfortunately, this seems like a very hard thing to do because the simulator, he doesn't see this view at all, he doesn't know T. So how can we ever hope that he will be able to do such a thing? Right? So our definition is actually going to be a bit different. That's what I said. Instead, we're going to require the existence of a simulator S that outputs a view that should look the same as whatever the verifier sees in interaction, has the same distribution. And then we'll say that if S used 2T steps in order to generate a particular view, then we'll require that V should take at least T steps in that particular view. Sorry? At least. If I took 2T steps to generate a simulator, then the verifier must have spent at least T steps there. So a bit more precisely, if we take this view and we feed it to the verifier, so we give him the coins here, and then I'll give him a message at a time, and now clock him. I give first one, he starts computing, he sends something back to me, I ignore it, I give him the next one, and so on and so forth. Then finally, we get a particular running time T, And that thing should be, you know, 2t should be at least, this should be at least t. Yes?
So I actually agreed with your previous slide, but here I don't understand. What if the simulator always generates a bad view?
The simulator should output something that's indistinguishable from the view.
Yeah, but he always chose the one that takes the longest to generate.
But that's not going to be indistinguishable then, right? Because this is something that's computable all the time.
But
yes.
Does this only apply to statistical view only?
No.
So what do you mean then by particular view, computational view?
Sorry? So for this talk, let's only talk about statistical zero knowledge, but actually this applies to computation also, but the definition is a bit more complicated.
But then the efficiency requirement
is one bigger for computation. So think precise state statistical theory.
Is this 2t steps precisely with expectation?
Sorry, it's?
The simulator used this many steps precisely with expectation.
Whenever this guy took, it doesn't actually number of steps the guy takes, a particular view, right? Then the guy should take at most two steps in that view. So it's not, this is, yeah, precisely the two steps.
Okay, so the question is whether it's true for every randomness.
Yeah, so I'll give the definition on the, you know, in two slides from now. Okay.
But this.
I will give the definition. If it's a question about the definition, I'll give it in two slides.
This is a non-Blankov definition this definition is specifically non-Blankov.
Why?
Because if I give you a verifier that is a black box verifier, we don't know the speed of its machine, but it, let's say it figured out how in Darby's talk, there's some compressible languages and there's some magic. We don't know how long it run. Maybe it solves some amazing problem. And if it's a black box machine that solves this amazing problem, and you don't know how to open its machinery, how do you know what it does? You cannot even say the simulator runs at the same time.
There's
some magic in
time here is defined in some kind of non-black box way. Yeah, I need to count the number of steps.
Okay, so you specify not given a black box, and you're given a specific code, and you can, on some specific machine, and you can count the steps. So it's,
yes, you
it's
count
a
deeper
the definition than a black, I mean, so it's comparable to the black box.
You're not giving the code, you're just giving the machine and it ticks.
If I'll give you a machine that solves an amazing problem and it doesn't even tell me what it solves,
it's
how are you
going
to
understand it?
We haven't seen the definition, so we'll discuss it soon. So anyway, this will be the invariant that we require, in essence. And you'll see very precisely soon what it's going to be. Okay. And now if we have this, the nice thing is we can, of course, flip things around to say that whenever this verifier actually takes t steps in a particular view, the simulator would have generated the same thing in at most 2t steps, that particular view.
You can flip around, right? Yeah.
Yeah, in perfect statistics, it can. Okay, so now we have the actual definition, then you can start again. So the definition will say as follows. We require that for every adversary verifier, so there is no restriction on polynomial time anymore. It should exist a simulator S, such again that the whatever the simulator output should be indistinguishable or the same or whatever to the view output by the prover, the view of the verified interaction with the prover. So that first condition is very similar to the traditional zero-knowledge definition. And the second thing says that for every instance X and every random tape R for the simulator, it holds that the number of steps that the simulator takes on input the random tape R and the instance X should be smaller or equal than 2 times the number of steps that the verifier takes on input this view output by the simulator on this random tape and these cogs. Okay?
Rafael?
Yes?
Can you switch quantifiers?
What quantifiers? The simulator and adversary? Yes, actually that's one can actually show, this is not true for traditional zero knowledge, but for this definition, it is actually true that the existence of a universal simulator is equivalent to a non-universal simulator.
But again, the definition makes sense only if you're given code for V.
Yes.
Given a black box, the trans V, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. But well, of course, a universal simulator gets the code of the verifier. But here it is the case that if you have a universal simulator, if you have a simulator like this, you also have a universal one. And that's not known for traditional zero knowledge. But
only given the code.
Of course, of course. Otherwise, you
cannot. Black box which says Pentium X, Y, Z.
Of course not, yeah.
What do you mean V-star gets as input the view? It doesn't have extra random coins?
No, V-star? V-star, a view consists of the random coins, here on the picture, right? A view consists of the random coins and the message. And that's why when you feed it to him, that encodes a particular type.
So in particular, I'm not happy if you say there exists an adversary code for V-star, then I understand it. But if you just say V-star...
Every adversary V-star. V-star is a Turing machine, right? With an auxiliary input and everything. So that's... how is the description?
Okay. Every Turing machine V-star...
Yeah.
So, okay, so again... Okay. So
every time you say, it says verify or simulator, anything that's a machine, think Turing machine.
So,
or
okay,
this machine.
So, sorry about that. So, Gurevich shows that N polylogon is closed for it's device independent.
Yeah.
But linear time, he shows, is not device independent.
Okay,
so,
P. You want that? Is that better now when I have a P? This 2, you don't have to get stuck on the 2. 2 can be a polynomial or whatever you want.
So if you make it polylog, then it's actually device independent.
Yeah, but I don't care about device independent or not, really. It's, you know, I would do on the same machine. On the same machine. Okay.
Yeah. I have questions. First of all, does the uniformity matter here a lot?
In what sense?
I mean, you said Turing machines, but if I want to think about circuits...
You can think about circuits. So Turing machines with auxiliary input, I think, are it. Right?
Sure, okay. And second question, do we need to refine the notion of polynomial distinguishability, or that really go along?
So this definition, yeah, for polynomial time, it becomes a bit more complicated. I'm not going to do it here. So this is the way the definition is for statistical imperfect.
So it's expected?
Sorry?
Expected?
What expected?
The runtime simulated.
There is no expectation or no anything, no probability. Whenever, you know, the time, this is input run a particular random tape on a particular instance. The actual number of steps to simulate the text here. No, these coins are.
So, I mean.
So what if simulator takes some extra coins?
These are like all the coins he has. Yeah.
So you said we should think of the definition for the case.
This is statistical.
So statistical. So then do we need to sort of refine the notion of soundness also quite precise?
No. So this is I only care about zero knowledge, but yeah.
For now.
Yeah.
One thing. Okay.
And what if these ignores this coin?
Sorry.
Just in general, can you compare this to what's in Bohrer's book? I mean, I know it's different, but...
Can I compare this to...?
So Bohrer has a notion of the time gap.
Yes, I will compare that very soon. Very soon.
So
well, I don't know how soon. Sorry? Okay. So what
question?
What these two things... what? Okay, sorry.
Yeah, so these random coins are given also to the verifier, right? And verifier is it...
No, the verifier are only giving the view output by the simulator. Okay, and I checked the number of steps it takes in that particular view.
So
right, we saw here that on a particular view, the verifier has a particular T, right? If I feed him a particular view, he has a running time in that view, all right? Okay. So these two properties together, if I'm combining, what I get here is that the running time distribution of the simulator will in fact be roughly the same as the running time distribution of the verifier, okay?
It's
stronger than that. No, this is, you know, as good as you get, right?
Yeah.
I'll require a simulator that has the same running time distribution as the verifier. Okay, and... So the rationale now behind this notion is that V-star learns nothing that he cannot have generated in the actual time he spent in interaction. And that's the desiderata we wanted, right? So let me point out two syntactical differences with the standard definition of zero knowledge. The first one is that our simulation now is tightly coupled per execution. Okay, and in particular, the running time of the simulator is tightly coupled to runtime verifier in that particular execution. And the second one is that our definition is in fact independent of the complexity class of the adversary, right? And this just makes the definition much stronger.
For all x
and
l?
All x and l, yeah.
How is it independent of the complexity class of the indistinguishability? Or
statistical, think statistically.
Okay.
So, of course, we can remove the 2, we can think of any p here. So we'll say that a zero knowledge proof has precision p of n, t if the running time of the simulator is smaller than a polynomial, is smaller than p of x, where x is the input length, and t would be here the running time of the verifier. Okay? So let me tell you a couple of implications of this definition if we compare it with traditional zero knowledge. So, traditional zero-knowledge proofs have the property that they hide everything that's hard for p, and as a consequence, we get that the class of probabilistic polynomial verifiers learns nothing new in a zero-knowledge proof. In contrast, precise zero knowledge proofs provide a guarantee that they don't even facilitate the computation of anything, no matter if it's something hard or if it's something easy. Okay? And as a consequence, we here get this, that all individual verifiers learn nothing new. Even those that come from a very small complexity class will not learn anything new. So let me give you two examples, one for each of them. And let's start with the first one, which is securing all properties.
So
Okay, so
the zero knowledge also says an outside adverse observer doesn't learn anything. Here I talk about
the verifier,
but
yeah.
Maybe the standard zero knowledge also says if when I'm outside an adversary whose polynomial time listens on the line to the zero knowledge proof, I learn nothing. Now this precise zero knowledge, it could be that according to precise zero knowledge, this particular machine learns nothing, but if I run 10 times faster and do some n cube computations, maybe in a precise zero knowledge I learn more than in a standard zero. I mean, what is the comparison for an outsider who listens and does some much more computations than the verifier? What is
less computation. He should do less computation than the verifier. Because then he learns, because the verifier computed more.
Yeah.
If the observer is less powerful than the verifier,
so I don't buy what you say. That
But it exactly relates to your thing. The observer is somebody who can compute. It has to be the verifier then. But this is exactly the thing. What did you say? You have the verifier and the prover, and they work the same amount. And then nothing is gained. But now we have the observer, and he's less powerful than the verifier.
No, I don't want to talk about observers because I think that's only complicated case of zero knowledge. There's nothing. This doesn't. I don't think this addresses it more than zero knowledge.
I mean, if it satisfies your definition, it satisfies regular zero knowledge definition.
This definition is much stronger than regular.
But now you have
this.
No.
Is that true or not?
Well, this definition is stronger than regular. Yeah.
No,
because now you look at people that they're computing.
No, but I think this is the answer to your question. This implies zero knowledge.
Okay, I'm going to continue now. We'll take it later on.
This implies regular zero knowledge.
Yes, this implies
zero
knowledge. This implies regular zero knowledge.
No, I want to say.
You remember this slide stronger.
I want to say, the point is that now. I'll take it off. I just want to say the point is that now you're looking at entities with their computing power.
Yeah.
And now you're saying, okay, this is a machine that can compute 80, I don't know what, operations
yeah.
per second. And now we want the adversary to be able to the simulator to devise the view also in 80 operations per second. So now we have to look at every entity with their computing power. And now you have to see what observers who are 40
yes,
computations per second learn from this setting. And it really
I only
talked
about the verifier, okay? Zero knowledge is prover, verifier, we'll take a verifier.
So you can imagine that verifier is more powerful.
So let's now do 10 applications, very fast. Okay, the first one is securing all properties. Ideally, we'd like to have a zero knowledge proof. There's a property I can prove anything I want with it, but I should facilitate the computation of anything else. So for instance, I'd like to prove that a graph is three-colorable, but I don't want to reveal what the maximum matching in this graph is. Maximum matching is something we can do in polynomial time, but still, I don't want to facilitate the computation of this. So what does this mean? In essence, I would like to preserve the success probability that an adversary has with a particular running time distribution. So if I have a verifier that with a particular running time distribution can compute the maximum matching with a certain success probability, I want to be able to do it even without talking to the prover with the same success probability, with the same distribution. And that's exactly what precise zero knowledge guarantees. So you can note here that this is in fact very meaningful even if p equals np. So this allows us to talk in a very meaningful way about zero knowledge proof even if p equals np. And if you want to think about some other more practical application, it could potentially be that proving something about a public database without revealing a bunch of other properties about this database that I don't want to reveal, right? So potentially a property I found in this database took me a lot of time to find with a lot of expensive data mining, and I want to reveal just that particular thing, but nothing else. And this would allow us to do that. The other thing, which is a more theoretical example, is let's consider exponential time verifiers, okay? And let's try to see what kind of zero knowledge properties we could ask for an exponential time verifier. So consider a guy that with 99% probability runs very fast, n steps, but with 1% probability, it takes 2 to the n steps, okay? The traditional zero-knowledge definition provides, as it is, no guarantees about V, because this guy is not probabilistic polynomial time, so therefore we don't have to simulate him. Yeah? The definition, okay? Not the
problem. Do you really need this strong definition to get all those things to send out? All this thing probably to send out would also be satisfied with the definition, you just limit the gap.
I will get back there, okay? So precise zero knowledge, of course, remains very meaningful for this guy. The guarantee we get is whenever this guy V star runs fast, takes n steps, the simulator runs fast. But whenever he runs exponential time, the simulator will also take exponential number of steps, but that's unavoidable. So we don't have, we only have 1 more hour now. So I'll talk a bit about if we can actually construct these zero knowledge proofs. And so usually when I tell people about this, a lot of people think that, well, okay, it's a new definition, but what about non-protocols that would already satisfy this, right? And potentially black box simulations would all do. In fact, the answer is that they don't. None of the known protocols and simulators are in fact precise. And the situation is even a bit worse, because it turns out that no known simulation techniques could actually be used to obtain precise zero knowledge.
In which way?
Simulators.
What do you mean?
Okay, so let's consider the classical way of performing simulation, which is to use the verifier as a black box. Okay? And this is called black box simulation. So what we do is we take the verifier, we put him in a black box, and then the simulator will interact with this guy, much like a traditional normal prover. But he has the advantage that he can rewind and restart the guy and feed him new messages. Okay? And the simulator does so for a while until he eventually gets tired and finally outputs one of the views that he generated in his interaction with the prover. Okay? And it's quite easy to see that in order to get a black box simulation for a non-trivial language, we need to rewind the guy at least once. Okay? And so now let's see what happens if we have this verifier, V star, that takes n steps with probability 1/2 and n to the 50 steps otherwise. I claim that a simulator that rewinds him twice with 50% probability will hit, you know, one execution that takes n steps and one execution that takes n to the 50 steps. And now this simulator is facing a choice, right? What should he output, right? Should he output the first view or the second view? So I claim that, you know, he can't output the first view here, the view that only took n steps, because then we're violating our invariant, because the simulator has taken n to the 50 steps, but output something where the verifier only takes n steps. So that doesn't work. So therefore we conclude that always when this happens, he must output the second one, but then we skew in the distribution into only outputting views that are much longer, right? And in fact, by working a bit more, this little argument can be turned into a proof to show that no black box simulators can work to get precise zero knowledge proofs.
Can you just repeat again, why can't you do the n?
Which one? This one?
Yeah.
Because the simulator here, he got these two views, right? So the simulator has taken n to the 50 steps in order to get this view.
Oh, I see.
So now we can't output this
precise,
one.
That's
yeah, exactly.
In the regular case, that's what you would do.
Yes.
Okay.
But the simulator can see how long the black box is running, you could output it and run
again. So we're going to show something like that. But
so
at least we don't know that known traditional simulators, the way they are now in analyze, can be used to get precise zero knowledge.
So that's for zero knowledge when you need reminding, but if you have something that does not...
Non-black box, yeah. So in fact, it can be seen also that the known, so this...
No, I didn't mean a non-black box. I meant if there was a simulator which is non-rewinding. Not
yeah, so ZK. Non-rewinding simulators for what?
Not for ZK, but for something else. If you have non-rewinding, would those be able to be precise?
So non-rewinding simulators can potentially, like in a combinational string model,
yes,
can potentially be
okay.
Precise, yeah. But without trusted setup, we have either the black box ones or non-black box techniques. And it turns out that non-black box techniques, the ones we know, which are not that many, in fact run into even worse problems. And very briefly, the reason is that in non-black box techniques, I take the verifier and rewrite them as a circuit, and that already transforms the worst case running time, the simulator will run in time that's proportional to the worst case running time of the verifier. So already we are screwed there. So the question is, you know, how bad precision do these protocols have that we know of? And that is it the case that they leak all of P? And the only answer to that was actually given by Colors Mechanic videos, and they...
What is P?
Sorry?
What is P?
All of polynomial time. All of P, P, T, B, P, 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 all of polynomial time. So, Colors Mechanic videos, and observe that if I have a black box zero knowledge protocol, it has something which I call worst case precision, which means that the expected runtime simulator will be a polynomial times the worst case running time of the verifier. And this is what Odette calls knowledge tightness. I prefer not to use the word tightness because it's actually not really tight, because I'm comparing the worst case running time with an expected runtime simulator.
Why is
it
worst case?
Why does it have to be expected? Sorry? So you can compare the worst case running time with the worst case there also, yeah, with subtypes. Sorry. Yeah, well, if I have a verifier that sometimes, as we have, like this guy, that sometimes has entry 50 and sometimes n, the worst case running time is entry 50. So now you get...
If you can invest entry 50, why don't you just invest all the time?
Sorry?
If you can afford to invest entry 50, why not just do it all the time like that?
Well, potentially can't, right? Maybe he buys a lottery ticket, gets $1 million every now and then, and buys a big computer, and then he does this, right? So that's more probability. Well, but you might buy some new.
Yeah, it's a stricter finding.
I mean, if this was the first information ever given, people wouldn't act right. It's the most sense of anything.
Okay, so.
Just a quick question. So, for example, I don't know. BGW, that
BGW is okay, yeah.
That has a simulation.
Yes.
Right? Like
yeah. We trust that with the honest majority is precise, yeah. Up to polynomial precision, yeah.
Maybe an additive
exactly.
Polynomial term because
yeah.
Linear
yeah.
Algebra. But that's in your definition, that kind of term is fine.
No, actually we can do better also. We can do better than that also, but so we can actually do it so. We can actually do a bit worse than just getting worst case precision. And in a very recent work with Sylvie also, we showed that, in fact, natural black box simulators have something called expected precision, which means that the expected runtime of the simulator is, in fact, the polynomial times the expected runtime of the verifier. And we can even take it a bit further to show that natural, strict black box simulators have good ith moment precision, meaning that the ith moment of the runtime of the simulator is a polynomial times the ith moment of the verifier. Now you might ask, why should I care about ith moment? Isn't expectation good enough? The reason is, well, different verifiers might have different cost of computation, so it might actually be important to guarantee this. Also, the higher moments.
Is this positive or negative?
Sorry?
Is this positive or negative?
This is, positive, but... it is positive.
It's standard technique.
Standard technique gives this, right? Standard technique can be used to give this. And...
Can you say what
is natural? So natural is that the simulator feeds things with they're indistinguishable from whatever the prover says. But really, so unknown protocols satisfy this, unknown simulators, and this unknown non-constant round protocol satisfy this. So in fact, original protocols by GMW and GMR satisfy this thing, the ith moment precision, whereas the more recent constant round protocols, we only know that they are expected precise. So it actually shows a quite interesting separation between the original protocols and the more recent protocols that are actually more round efficient, but they have a quantitatively worse zero knowledge property. Expectation of x to I.
Is it the same polynomial for all
I? No, it depends on I. The precision here depends on I. It's a function. So, but let's get back now to the precise zero knowledge. And let's just mention that again, that even if I have expected or precise, very good expected or ith moment, expected precision or ith moment precision, even this being one, that doesn't give us precise zero knowledge. Because if you consider a verifier again that 99% takes n steps, otherwise entry 50, his expected runtime is entry 50, of course, or order entry 50. So a simulator for this guy could potentially always take entry 50 steps, and so we have something that's very non-precise. So now let's talk about some new techniques and our positive results. And since we have so much time, I'm only going to show one new technique and one result. I changed the slides very fast. So the result I would like to tell you about is that how we can just, by assuming the existence of statistically hiding commitments,
we can get a statistically precise zero knowledge argument for MP. And in the paper, we show a lot of other results. And in fact, we're able to prove most of the results on zero knowledge, potentially sometimes with slightly worse assumptions. This was optimal at the time when we wrote the paper, but then the annoying paper that that we'll hear about tomorrow actually showed that we can get statistical zero knowledge arguments from one-way functions. But now I'm going
to
show how to
do time to take you.
Sorry?
But what? The time it will take you to rework this proof.
Yeah. It's non-precise. It's non-precise, yeah. Okay, so the simulation technique that we'll use here will in fact be a mixture of black box and non-black box simulation. And the main idea is to provide a simulator that at the first stage sort of learns the running time distribution of the verifier in a very weak way, and then later uses this in order to exploit this in order to provide a simulation. Okay? And so what I'd like to show today was a statistical zero knowledge argument for MP with precision 2t. So whenever the verifier takes t steps, the simulator takes 2t steps. And that's what they give in the paper, but I will now very briefly show instead something slightly weaker, which is this. And that's already not too bad, because our favorite friend here with NNN350, what we get now is a simulator that with 99% probability takes n squared and otherwise n351, so it's already very good for that guy. Right? So.
You have 14 more minutes.
14?
Maybe I'll give you more.
Great. Then I can slow down now again.
Awesome.
So, I thought this talk would take half an hour. It didn't. So, let us. Our starting point will be the beautiful zero knowledge protocol by Fagi and Shamir, which proceeds as follows. It proceeds in three steps. First, the verifier sends, picks a random string R and applies a one-way function to it and sends f of R to the prover. Then the verifier will prove in a way that he knows R. And then finally, the prover will prove that either X is true or that he now knows R. And we require some properties of these two things. The first one is something called witness hiding, which means that this proof should not reveal the witness, and in particular should not reveal the string R. And the second proof here should have a property called witness indistinguishability, which means that it shouldn't reveal which of these two things is the case. So if either X is true or P knows R. Okay. And on a very high level, the reason why this protocol may convince the verifier here is that the verifier knows that once he picks this R at random, after sending this message R, the prover doesn't know R. After sending f of R, the prover doesn't know R, because this is a one-way function. He also knows that after this blue stage, the prover still doesn't know R, because this proof is witness hiding. Therefore, if the prover convinces him that X is true or that he knows R, this guy knows that X is indeed true. Okay? So this is convincing. So now we need to show that this is zero knowledge. And that follows from the fact that if this verifier now is able to convince the prover that he knows R, then I will be able to take him and shake him around for a bit in order to extract this R. If he knows it, I will be able to find it. Okay? Now once I have this, the simulator can now use that R in order to provide a convincing proof here. Okay? So I was very imprecise about the most important thing here, which was the shaking around. So I take the verifier, shake him until I find R. So what we actually do here is we use the verifier as a black box, we feed him some new messages, we rewind him and feed him new message until we eventually find R. And so it's easy to see that if we consider our friend here, and if we would rewind this guy n times, then you know, with extremely, except with exponentially small probability, we'll always hit one execution when this guy takes n to the 50 steps. So the simulator of this Fagi-Shamir protocol will in fact always run n to the 50 steps, whereas this guy takes n steps most of the time. However, if we were able to in some way simulate the view of the verifier in this stage, while at the same time extracting the message R, and do a precise simulation of these messages, meaning that we don't spend more time than the actual number of steps that the verifier takes in this view, then we'll be done, right? If that was possible. So that's what we're going to try to do. So what we need is a precisely simulatable proof of knowledge. I won't define this because we already spent too much time on definitions. Why two utility just, it's a protocol where I will be able to generate the view of Bob in a precise way, and without and also extract R if indeed this view is convincing. Okay? So let's see very fast now how we can do this. And the tool we're going to need is something called special sum proofs. And this is in fact a very general and natural type of proof systems. An interactive proof is set to be special summed. If it's three-round, we don't need the three-round thing actually, but let's consider only three-round protocols that have the property that if I give you two transcripts of this protocol that both have the same first message, different second messages, and both are accepting, then I will be able to extract a witness. Okay?
So is it different from the Sigma protocols?
It's the same. Okay. Same thing, different thing. Sigma protocols have some extra properties. This is one of the properties they have.
So why do you name?
This is the name people use. This is the property, one of the properties that a Sigma protocol has. I think it's from the CDS paper they call it. So one of the lemmas that we show in the paper is that if I take a Sigma protocol and if I repeat it sequentially omega 1 times, then this will in fact be a precisely simulatable proof of knowledge. Okay. So what I mean by repeating it omega 1 times is that the prover and the verifier will execute this thing omega 1 times sequentially, and at the end the verifier here will accept only if all of these things, all of the proofs were accepting. Okay? And I claim that that thing will actually be a precisely simulatable proof of knowledge. So now to do, you know, to prove that, I need to exhibit a procedure that simulates this view while at the same time extracts R if indeed it is the case that this view was convincing, right? If Bob convinced Alice here. Okay? And bless you. So the procedure will proceed as follows. We'll take this this guy here, and I'll feed him random challenges, R1, R2, and so on, exactly like what Alice would have done, like the verifier would have done here, okay? With exactly the same distribution. Now, on top of that, I'll now do a non-black box thing, which is I'll count the number of steps this guy takes before answering to each of these queries. So I've given the first one, I check how many steps he takes, I do the same thing here, I get T1, T2, TM, okay? So now I know how many steps it takes before answering those particular messages, right? What I'll do now, after that, is that I'll go back here, okay, so I'll do this first, and this is the view that I will output. So this is the view I've generated, and now I need to find R also. So now I'll go back here, and I'll feed them a new challenge, but this time I will not let him run for longer than T1. So if he tries to take more than T1 steps, I will cut him off. And I'll say thank you, and then I will give him a new one. So I'll never let him run more than T1 steps. I do repeat it n times. After that, I go on to the next one. I do it n times here, and so on and so forth. Yes?
So I mean, you're running to time at least n in each iteration?
Yeah.
But what if its response time is sublinear?
Its response time is...
What if its response time is log n?
What's it?
So what is the problem with that?
So then you're running for longer than T1.
So this is not in order to handle that you need something else. I'm not going to go into that here.
What do you mean you cut him off?
So I emulate his execution, but I never let him run for more than T1 steps.
So if he wants to take longer than that, you remind him?
Yeah, I start again. I'm sitting at the debugger, I place step until he takes T1 steps. After that I say no, let's go back.
So the first time you can go back.
Yeah, the first time I let him run and I count the number of steps he takes. And then second time.
Yeah, but then in the second little interaction.
Yeah.
Now you cannot. What are you going to reset?
No, I go back here. This I always go back to the original view.
The very first one. Right?
Yeah, the very first one.
Okay.
Is there any common currency
for this? No, so I will actually show that this works.
This works.
This works. Yeah. Okay. So what I claim about this is, first of all, this simulation is perfect, right? The view output has exactly the same distribution, done, nothing to worry about. The second thing is that the simulation has precision order n times t plus some polynomial there, okay? And that's again because I only let him run for
the actual number of steps it takes, and I repeat it n times. So it's easy to see that the simulation, in fact, is precise. Now, the only thing we need to see is if I will indeed be able to extract a witness. So will this procedure work ever? Right? Because now I'm stopping. So that's what we need to show. And here, let me make two simplifying assumptions for today. Let's assume that this Bob here has the same running time distribution in each of these subproofs. And let's assume, just to be nice, that he never aborts. That is, whenever I give him something, he will always give me back a message. And both of these things can be handled in a not too complicated way. So if we have these simplifying assumptions, now it's enough to just focus on a single proof here and try to analyze what is the success probability in extracting a single proof. Okay? So let's do that. So recall, what we do is that we first feed this guy a message R, and we check the number of steps he takes, T. And then we feed him a new message, R1, and let him run. But if he tries to take more than T steps, we cut him off. And then we do so. And hopefully, at the end, he will, in fact, be able to give us back an answer. If that is the case, we obtain two transcripts with the same first message but different second message. We can extract it with this R. Right? So we do this n times. And extraction will succeed if we, in fact, are able to get another answer back from him. Okay? So we need to analyze what is the probability that we will, in our end trials, get back another answer. So if we make another simplifying assumption, which is that, let's assume that this guy's running time is completely uniform, okay? Then it's easy to see that the probability that my extraction fails is going to be 1 over n plus 1. Because we have n plus 1 uniformly random numbers. What's the probability that the first one is the smallest? Right, it's 1 over n plus 1. Yes? So then things are simple. Unfortunately, this guy doesn't have to use the uniform distribution, but might use any other distribution. And I won't have time to explain exactly how we do this. But in fact, one can show that the same will roughly hold even if the guy uses any arbitrary distribution. And roughly, the way we do this is by considering all different sets of n plus 1 tuples of distinct queries, okay? And with high probability, the guy will actually ask queries that are distinct. And now for each such tuple that is bad, that is for each tuple where this extraction fails, we can in fact find n other ones where the extraction wins. And then we can show that these are distinct, and we get this. Yeah.
Is it sort of accurate to think that it's not exactly the median running time, but we're saying we're not too far out on the, or not too close to zero in the distribution of running times with high probability in like some fraction of these. These iterations. So, I mean, sort of one thing would be to say for at least for roughly half of the iterations, we'll be past the median.
Yeah. So,
okay,
Mark can think of that.
Sort of
exactly.
A more refined version of that argument.
Yeah.
So,
Mark can actually. Yeah.
An intuition.
Yes, I think that intuition is pretty good. So, what we then showed is that, okay, if in every of these things I will be able to succeed with probability 1 over n plus 1, if I repeat it omega 1 times, we will, in fact, we fail with, what do I say? Yeah, the probability that we fail is very small, or quite small, so if we repeat it omega 1 times, we get the probability that extraction fails from all of these subproofs is, in fact, exponentially small, and we're done. Okay? So we've, in fact, shown now how to construct one of these precisely simulatable proofs of knowledge. And it just turns out that if we plug it in here to the protocol of Fagge-Schmier, this manual protocol, what we get now is a precise knowledge proof. And the reason is that now the simulator can just run this precise simulation of the proofs of knowledge here while getting R at the same time, and I will later use R in this stage, and that's it. And so to wrap up about our constructions, in fact, all of our construction relies on this kind of crisscross relation between proofs of knowledge and zero knowledge. And in the paper we have a couple of different knowledge precision lemmas which can be used to construct precise proof of knowledge protocols from scratch using some kind of special sound proofs with different properties. And later we use these precise proofs of knowledge in order to get precise knowledge. And so how many, how much do I have left?
None.
5 minutes, okay?
Three.
Short 5 minutes, okay. 3 minutes, I'll do faster. Okay, so today we discussed now these precise zero-knowledge proofs, but as I said at the beginning, the notion of precision can be applied to all these other different crypto animals like proofs of knowledge, encryption, commitment, secure competition. Very, very fast now. Encryption, for instance. So recall that the traditional notion of encryption by Colossi Michele essentially says that anything that can compute from the ciphertext can be computed in probabilistic polynomial time given only the length of the message encrypted. And the precise analog of this would instead be to require that anything computed from the ciphertext can be computed in the same time given only the length. Okay. And it actually turns out that in the case of encryption, it's actually much simpler to get precise encryption schemes. And in fact, all encryption schemes that have the property of having pseudo-random ciphertext are directly precise. And what I think is nice with that is that it actually gives some kind of motivation for, a quality motivation for why we would like to have encryption schemes with pseudo-random ciphertext. And in fact, if you would ask someone in the street what an encryption scheme is, they would probably say, you know, you take a message and you scramble it until it looks random, right?
It would lead to a bad.
No, not that. Okay, but in a sense, this gives a quite strong justification to why that is actually a good thing. You want to take a message, scramble it until it looks random.
Never
got this trained. So, I would also like to say that precision is not something which you can just apply to all things, but I think precision actually opens up and makes cryptography possible in settings that we didn't consider that much before. For instance, we can now talk very meaningfully about cryptography with P equals MP. We can now start.
Why can't you just use epsilon P analysis and just refine the current analysis?
You could, but now this becomes very much more meaningful when we talk about the distributions, because in fact that can be a very big difference of just changing your distribution a bit can be a big game. And the same thing we cannot talk about, and I think we should start investigating zero knowledge proofs for P. For what languages in P can we give precise zero knowledge proofs? And PCPs, proper testing, everything. And while we're at it, we should maybe even consider precise reductions in complexity theory. There is reductions that preserve sort of the runtime distribution of an attacker.
So, well, just maybe it's a philosophical thing, but I think something is missing here.
And I can change slides.
Well, no, something is missing because, okay. So it's true that for zero knowledge it's very nice that we have this precise relation in respect of this period, whatever, the machine difference. But for example, even if you look at this protocol, so assume I have a zero knowledge proof for some language where one is verifier runs in time n log n.
Yeah.
It's not precise. And then you say, you know what, here I'll transform it into a precise zero knowledge where one is verifier runs in time n to the 200. But it's now precise, it's fantastic, you get all those things. But even the honest guys has to run a time after the 200. So I think it's a very good thing, but it has to be coupled with the efficiency, like your slowdown, this omega 1.
Oh, actually, that is, I don't have a really slowdown in terms of, you know, theoretically, there's no slowdown, really.
Well, I mean, I know this omega 1 in your example, but I'm saying is if you just want to sell a definition without looking at the protocol,
yeah.
Something is missing, you have to talk about, you know, the side of the story what the honest guy does.
Yes, I agree. You know, but that's a question about efficiency. You say that there are some protocols that where the verifier takes n steps and might take n times omega 1. That's the. In fact, I can show you verifiers that are really efficient as it gets. So they're polylogarithmic.
So I'm saying your thing you show that there is no. What I'm saying is a definition or whatever. You cannot just put this thing. And
no, a definition is something. Then you say, what about the protocols? Now you say that my protocols seem to be more. The verifier has runs is less efficient than traditional proofs.
Well, I'm saying either you put it as part of the definition, but I'm saying when you sell the definition itself, ignoring the protocols, you can't just talk about this precise knowledge how great it is, because you're losing the efficiency of the verifiers. Maybe in order to make it precise, you make all the verifiers instead of, you know, n squared, n to the 200.
Yes, but I don't, right? The protocols are not.
Well,
that's a hypothetical worry that potentially, you know, okay, good, by going to a stronger definition, my protocols become so cumbersome, but they're actually not. Right?
Well,
so I would like to say, like, in theory, I think this is a notion we should investigate when we investigate zero knowledge. In practice, you might say, is this the right thing? In practice, we use random oracles, and then everything is precise anyway. in the random oracle model. So, right, so when we do theoretical research, zero knowledge, I think precise zero knowledge is what we should look at then. And these things don't have, like the protocols they have are not, it's not really, this lambda is not great, right?
Because it doesn't go well with the composition agenda, right?
Which composition?
The possibility agenda.
Well, you know, one can have two different agendas. So, to wrap up, knowledge is clearly something very important, and it's important in many different fields in computer science. We talked about cryptography today, but of course, game theory, epistemic logic, distributed computing, AI, and so on and so forth. So I think it's very important that we try to capture the notion of knowledge as precisely as possible, and I believe that it will have many implications on all of these fields, and in fact, on, you know, if we understand this notion better, I think we'll, these fields will come closer also.